Top Gun inspired one of our coworkers here to want to be a fighter pilot. He eventually became a teacher. Said, saw all the math involved there. Said, nope, nope, that ain't happening.
Really?
Why do I mention this to you, Jen Jensen? Is because Pro Day is going on over at USC today. Unfortunately, this is one of the moments, I think, where a lot of, not just Gamecock fans, but a lot of athletes, it's like their final athletic endeavor. You go through your workouts, pro scouts will be there. You put your times in. You see your times compared to other guys. And that can be maybe the final moment of realization, like, unfortunately, the dream doesn't happen for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
I think most of us don't get to that point. Most of us who try to be athletes, it usually happens somewhere earlier. Some of us, it happens in Little League or in high school. Mine happened after 1 year of college, saying, oh, yeah, that clearly ain't going to work out. But that will happen today. Sometimes we realize it's, I don't know, maybe in middle school you figure out that your dream, for whatever reason, like when math is involved in fighter pilots, say, oh, I'm not going to do that. Via the Shepherd's Glass inbox this morning at Tim Hill at 107.5 is where Nate hit me up. He says something very similar to one of our co-workers. He wanted to be a Blue Angel. Now he sells insurance.
Ah,
Blue Angel. I can see that for sure. Travis says, I just knew I was going pro in basketball, but when reality set in, it's been 911 EMS riding this ambulance for the last 20 years. Well done, Travis. I can imagine you get a lot of satisfaction from that as well. An adrenaline rush for sure, a different type of one.
Absolutely.
But some would argue, I think most would argue, a lot more important doing the ambulance than playing
basketball. And he probably sees people who still think that they're aspiring to be in the NBA when they're, you know, 45. And you
right. Yeah, you pick those people up, yeah. Yep.
With the Achilles blown out or the knee or...
Is that, but I think you talk about, like, it seems like, is that pretty much everybody's goal? So, but from about 7 to maybe about 12 or 14, you're like, I'm going to play something professionally, be it basketball or...
I think a lot of us.
I mean...
I know it was for me. For a lot of us who we have these conversations still, it's the way that we... keep that dream alive to some degree. Like, we become fans because we take enjoyment and we kind of see ourselves doing that originally, I think. And now, as old people, we're like, oh man, I enjoy watching someone else at least being able to do that. Like, that's, I think, the allure of the NCAA tournament to a large degree, too. Like, when Loyola Chicago hits the buzzer beater, we all had that moment in our backyard. Some of us maybe still do,
yeah.
Sadly, as old people. Or you see your kids going through that and say, maybe your kid's going to do that one day. But at least somebody did that, man. And to share in that moment just to some really small degree, I think, is why we all still watch.
Oh, I think we watch, yeah, the hope. And it's just fun. It's just, I think one of the sporting moments that I always got caught up in was the one shining moment that they would come on after the championship game, and just the way they present that montage of highlights and the song that goes with it. But yeah, the NCAA tournament was always something, man, that I just wanted to participate in and be able to be a part of. And in a way, being a sports talk radio show host, you kind of get to do that, kind of. But
right,
you know, it's the maybe the next best thing. But that line is going to definitely be used tomorrow morning, that since I'm as tall as most of you second graders, this was the best route I could get to being around sports. But it's the pro day today for South Carolina. I think it's always fascinating. What I always find more fascinating is not the guys who just graduated, but the guys who are coming back to, like, do it again. Because you'll get that. I think a couple years ago, maybe 5 or 6 years ago, Savelle Newton participated again, I believe.
Right.
And we've seen that where certain players will come back and try and go back through it to maybe catch a scout's eye. Or
well, he had an unfortunate incident. I think he yanked a hammy like early on in his original pro day workout, so he didn't feel like he got the full workout in. And some guys do that. Yeah, some guys actually play in the NFL and then will come back and go through a pro day workout at a school, maybe not even their school or nearby where they live. Like, these things, there are no real rules in this thing. Like, if a scout will watch you work out, then you're in. It's kind of that deal. What Wesley Saunders came back to Carolina after he was kicked off the football team to go through his pro day workout. Clearly that worked out to some degree. And then he's just started showing up at NFL camps after that.
with his cleats, it should be noted. Yeah,
hey, guys.
I think that would be actually pretty cool if you could find a way, and I'm pretty sure it's legal, like if you're Clemson, you go do your pro day. Because I'm one of those people like Will Muschamp or, and to a lesser extent, like Dabo Sweeney, who everything's built around recruiting. And if I could get Deshaun Watson to come back and be my quarterback for the wide receivers that day. And then, because you'll see now some of these pro athletes, they'll come back. Now is kind of the time of the year. They've got a little bit of downtime. Then kind of come back and be around the pro days. And if you could get some of those guys to come back and kind of participate in the pro day, make it more of a recruiting type event.
I love going out and recruiting.
See?
Well, Carolina gets a lot of people who come back this time of year. I assume a lot of them are in town now and will be out over at the indoor facility later today, which is not open to the public, by the way. That Williams-Bryce workout would have been had they done it outdoors, but since they move it inside, then you cannot go and just attend as a casual fan. But, yeah, we've seen Jadeveon Clowney back at this thing, DJ Swearinger. It's something that I think coaches do use to just build the culture of the program. And a couple of years ago, I remember seeing Alshon Jeffrey and Melvin Ingram and all these guys, Stephon Gilmore, I believe, just on the sidelines just watching other guys participate in these things. I think current coaches also encourage their younger guys to go out and just watch, just to see the environment so they'll know what they're going to get into in a year, 2 years, 3 years, whatever it may be, just to see a part of it. Because when we were talking to Langston Moore about it, I was talking to Langston about it, filling in on the halftime show relatively recently, during the NFL Combine, and he mentioned his Combine experience and how it's just a job interview. It's an extended job interview, and you take all the information in, and you're trying to present your best self, and it's a pretty intense experience. This is not quite as extensive as that, but a local example. It's kind of the branch of the NFL Combine here in Columbia today.
Yeah, and again, the other part of this is how much – do you go out and try and work out or showcase if you've already been to the Combine? If you get a guy like Hurst or Sky Moore.
That's when it's
players,
more strategic.
I always grasp what they're doing there. But because, you know, it's one of those things. That goes back to what we discussed even with Hayden Hurst and going back to, like, the meat market is the NFL Combine. You go out and you slip, you run a bad 40 time. Like, this is your opportunity, I guess, to show that, okay, that 40 time's not real. It's such a weird – the NFL Combine, all the things that they do leading up to this are always such a weird kind of events. The evaluations are weird because you're right, Hayden Hurst, he's got 3 years of film. He's got 3 years of film, but more of where he'll be drafted is based on his workouts here as opposed to the 3 years of film. And that's always very strange to me.
Well, it depends on the organization, what they value more, right? A lot of these organizations in their – ego, I think, evaluate their own specific scouting reports more than they do what they've seen on tapes because they say, oh, the college coach doesn't know what he's doing, or maybe specific programs, they value them more. Like if someone rolls through Alabama, what they've been able to accomplish there because they're beating out another NFL guy to get on the field, maybe they evaluate their playing experience. They weigh that a little higher or heavily in that whole process. But it's a really interesting look at the professional world, like how organizations evaluate your worth and your value. And that's what's going on over at USC today. Interested in hearing more from you about what you wanted to go pro in and then what you eventually became a pro in. Alfonso hits us up on the Shepherd's Glass inbox this morning at Tim Hill 107.5. He says, I wanted to be a beer man at Wrigley Field. I'm a social worker now.
We're going to drink.
Thank you, Alfonso. It's an interesting transition. More via the Shepherd's Glass inbox. David Boyd says, told my college coach I wanted to play in the NBA. He told me I should coach. I'm glad he did. He says he's got 6 championships now. Well done, David. And that's something that you don't want to be told, especially at the time. But then you look back on it later. It's like having that tough teacher back in the day who's difficult on you. And then you look back and appreciate it more later. Probably that same kind of advice. So Bill's also looking for advice on career day tomorrow. Career day, first experience for you. 6 15-minute sessions you have been
got to offer advice, or what should I say? Which I'm more worried about what I should not say. Like,
Well, isn't that like self-fulfilling? Like, once that gets out there, doesn't it get in your head and you're just like, doesn't it consume you?
I mean, like, what would you not want to hear, I guess, or what would you be concerned about your child hearing? Like, I guess that's my point. Like, I feel like I'm going to appeal to a certain segment of the audience. I feel like the second
grade. Well, these are second graders.
The second grade boys are going to be like, okay, that's pretty cool. The second grade girls are going to be like, okay, who's next? Who do we get to listen to next? Is there anybody else? Is this the only guy they could bring in here?
Well, see, you can bring in some donut expertise, so I think you can kind of bring them all together.
Yeah, I feel like the humor that I bring to this show is going to go over the head of the second graders.
No, I'm thinking just give some reviews or hand out donuts.
Or just hand out
kids.
Donuts.
Yeah.
They told me I could bring props, like, and I don't know what to take either. Like, I thought about just, that would actually be hilarious. Tommy Moody and Jay Phillips come in here and both mics are missing tomorrow. I've got them at the career day.
They'd be outstanding.
But I guess I need to check into maybe a banner upstairs after the show.
No. Maybe. That's a terrible. Think as a second grader. You want to see a banner?
What else am I going to set up?
What does a second grader want to see? That's how you got to think.
Yeah.
Take some Nerf balls. Throw them around.
Well, look, the 3 years I spent in second grade doesn't really pay off at this point in time. That was a long time ago.
Bill Gunner, ladies and gentlemen.
Do you have suggestions, or you guys just got, you're
Nerf
just going
to
tell me?
Bring some little balls you got around the house. Chuck them around.
Okay, throw them at kids. Got it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that always goes
Let
well.
Let them throw them at each other. That'll 15 be. Minutes of carnage, and they'll be the greatest thing ever. Like, man, that was fun when your dad came to career day. We had a great time.
Like dodgeball. All right, got it right.
Are you telling me that? Well, I've never done this before, so I'm just throwing advice out there. Jen is the only experienced one on career day here in the crew.
And it wasn't really that exciting, you know, because it just.
Okay, so you can tell him what not to do. Did you bring any props? Maybe that was a problem.
That could be. Well, and you got to figure, I was talking to, like, fifth graders, so it was
a different
audience.
Older, yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah. Maybe you bring a little jam box on your shoulder there. Play some radio.
A jam box?
Yeah, you're playing the radio. I'm just spitballing here.
Do the
just
kids,
trying to help
would
you
they
out.
Even know what a jam box is?
No. Well, I don't even know if I know what a jam box is.
Man. Come on now.
I'm just saying, man. It wasn't something we were rolling around Lexington Elementary School with, a jam box.
Okay. That's what. It's because you were doing it in the 90s instead of the 80s?
Yeah,
is that
pretty much. Yeah, pretty much. That's what you got me on there.
I missed you. That five-year gap we have between us
well,
is a big one
you.
When it comes to the
jam box.
A lot
changed, man. A lot changed.
Got some basketball details to fill you in on as it pertains to the USC women's team. They know their opponent now, and it's not probably who they would have expected, or certainly not what the seeds would have predicted in the NCAA tournament. Give you details on that and their next game as we roll on this morning, and wanting to hear from you. 803-404-6100. Love Chevrolet phone lines. What did you want to go pro in? What did you eventually go pro in? And now that can lead to the best and worst part of your job moving forward, because I got to assume if you're a football player, this is the one of the worst parts of it, preparing for a pro day. Like, no one as a football player says, man, yeah, I really love, maybe if you're really fast, I really love running the 40, or I can't wait to do this 3-cone drill, or see how many times I can bench 225. It's a intense day full of anxiety, I think, to a large degree. They've been preparing this thing almost solely for months leading up to this point. Women's basketball, Buffalo is the opponent for South Carolina in the Sweet 16 on the women's side of the NCAA tournament. Buffalo, an 11 seed, absolutely blowing out Florida State last night by 21 points. Big upset in the NCAA women's tournament, and this thing has turned out to be exactly like the men's. Two 11 seeds have advanced to the Sweet 16 on the women's side of things. Central Michigan, the other one, they won by 17 against 3-seeded Ohio State. Florida State, also a 3-seed, getting upset last night by Buffalo. So Buffalo will certainly have the home court advantage playing up near Albany, New York. Roger hit us up on the Shepherd's Glass inbox about that, says he's concerned about that. The Buffalo and Albany are 288 miles apart, but he says those Northern Yankees are a creepy backwoods sort. Roger's from up there. Don't take offense there, Jen. She's raising her hand, trying to get all in a tiff about it. P.S., Roger says he wanted to play center field for the Yankees but opted for roofing. Well done, Roger. Roger weighing in on what you wanted to go pro in and what you actually went pro in. James gives us the first part of that via the Shepherd's Glass inbox. He said he told Mr. Knows It that he wanted to be Super Spider Incredible Hulk. He says he should have followed the dream, I'm guessing. Instead of becoming Super Spider Incredible Hulk, he only became maybe Incredible Hulk or maybe just Spider-Man.
Makes sense.
Not the combination. The combination's a tough one.
Yeah.
Salvador says he wanted to play for the Magic. Now I somehow magically wake up for a dumb job every day. Cool. Salvador didn't give us the details on the dumb job. Well done. Matt Gregory says, I told myself I was going to play baseball with Ken Griffey Jr. Now I teach students with disabilities. Hashtag winning. Albert says he wanted to play shortstop for the Braves. I now work in the legal field and do adjunct teaching at the college level. I became, Albert says, what Greg Maddux looks like.
Oh, okay.
Well done,
sir. Kind of similar. There you go.
The joke's rolling in when as it pertains to your advice for your second grade career day tomorrow.
Yeah, everybody's got jokes. Nobody's got advice.
I know. I think Brad gave you some good advice. He says, talk about your experience working on set with Mike Myers being Vern Troyer's stunt double. Yeah. You didn't appreciate that advice? Is that what you're saying? Yeah. Is that experience too difficult? You don't want to talk about that, or you don't think that would help the second graders?
Don't think that would help the second graders.
That Hollywood stuff, you keep them away from
it? Nah, you try not to brag too much.
Who was it, Craig, that says over-under on how many second graders are taller?
Oh, there's going to be multiple.
Yeah, so what are you putting the number at? 2.5?
Are we talking about just in the classes in particular or in all six combined?
Well, let's go. You're doing six different 15-minute sessions, allegedly.
So roughly 140 kids.
Is that how many it is?
The 20 a class is what I'm going to ballpark it at.
And you said 140?
I was going for about an average of about 22 to 23. I don't know. Okay. I was thinking 25, and then I was thinking 20, and I was trying to, in my mind, I was trying to work back and forth between about 150 kids. Thought that would be way too many, so went with an average of about 140 there. So I was going with an over-under of about 125. It's tall, man. The kids are getting tall, yeah.
Come on now.
All right, they're less than that.
I put it at 7.5. How about that?
Okay. All offensive tackles.
And what are you listing yourself at today? It is pro day, so we need your official height and weight.
Yeah.
We'll give you, maybe we should do that later. We'll do the measurables. We'll get what Bill lists himself at, and then we'll do the actual, get the tape measure out for you.
Sounds good.
So what are you listing yourself at today?
Coming in today, I was at 5'7", 157.
Okay. 5'7", 157.
I'm up 4 pounds from Saturday morning when I was at 153.
5'7"?
It's amazing that nobody has control of your mic back there.
She does.
Yeah, nobody else.
And that's the most important thing.
Mm-hmm. NIT scores from last night. Former Gamecock Mike Boynton, Oklahoma State move on. They win at home. And I mentioned it a little bit earlier, just the environment at Oklahoma State. Pretty impressed last night. They were playing a legit team, Stanford, right?
Uh-huh.
Another legit program. I remember back when I was at USC, actually, that's when Stanford was at its peak. Mike Montgomery coaching them before he moved on to the NBA. South Carolina State won the MEAC that year that I'm thinking of. And if they weren't a 16, I think they were a 16 seed, and they had to take on number one seed Stanford back in the old Mad Dog days when Mike Madsen and Casey Jacobson were their best players. Stanford just hadn't been relevant in college basketball recently. Example of that, they go to the NIT this year. Oklahoma State, a 6-point winner last night. Mike Boynton's solid rookie season as a head coach at Oklahoma State continues to go pretty well. I believe they're moving on now to the third round in the NIT. Those were second round NIT games last night.
Yeah, and again, I think that if South Carolina had gotten in there, it would have been good for the program to continue to go to a postseason play. They didn't, so obviously we'll move on from that. But I will admit, it's not like anybody would be paying overly close attention to what's going on in the NIT right now. I'm sitting here having to look up to just see what the current bracket is. You mentioned going to the third round, and I'm just kind of seeing who's remaining in this thing and where everybody stands as the countdown to New York is on. But it's a little something extra. But let's be honest, and especially the way that the first weekend of the NCAA tournament kind of played out and the changes. We were in the studio this morning, and they were showing kind of the Loyola Chicago, the nun up there that is
Sister
now
Jean.
Sister Jean is becoming such the popular storyline up there. So that's kind of been entertaining. Obviously, you have the storyline of Nevada now and Eric Musselman, who I guess got some attention for taking his shirt off. He was prepared for the water bath that he was going to get coming into the locker room. But it's been an entertaining NCAA tournament, one of the more entertaining ones we've seen in quite some time just on opening weekend. And so I think that takes away, too, from any attention that the NIT might have gotten, any storyline that the NIT might have gotten.
Pro day over at USC, another story today for sure. So a lot of guys will improve or not their pro stock moving forward, and maybe the interviews I've always heard from these guys almost as important as the numbers they'll put up. It's the most important job interview of their lives, and this is an extension of the NFL Combine for a handful of Gamecocks this year, and then the guys who did not get the invite, this is their one shot to put up some numbers that can really impress. We've talked about it before. There are guys kind of suited to this event or these type of evaluations. A guy like Troy Williamson was the most famous, who ended up putting ridiculous numbers up in his pre-draft workouts and got drafted accordingly. Number 7 overall, I think it was, or something to that effect. And clearly his NFL career did not kind of live up to that hype. What, Darius Heyward-Bey is another guy that, remember, the
jumped
Raiders
up,
drafted him so highly. We've seen a bunch of examples of these guys who help improve their stock. And then there are other guys who aren't Tom Brady's 40 time at the NFL Combine is one of the most famous internet videos for a reason, because it shows a guy who doesn't look like an athlete who eventually went on to become arguably the best football player of all time. So there are different guys who will perform differently today. And then some of those guys will kind of see their football careers end today. This will be the last thing that happens, a pro day workout sometimes. That's why we're asking you, what were you going to go pro in? And then what did you eventually become pro in? Michael hits me up with, wanted to go pro in computer programming, ended up with the family business, importing and distributing worms throughout the U.S. Glad it worked out this way, Michael says. Well done, sir.
Okay.
I feel like there's a Dumb and Dumber joke in there somewhere. I believe the goal there was to open up the worm store and call it I Got Worms.
I forgot about that part.
I don't get out much.
I showed up this morning with hope that the great listeners, the folks that tweet in or call in, would offer advice on maybe how to handle his career day tomorrow, mm-hmm. and, you know, maybe really be able to help me.
It was an earnest plea.
It was kind of, yeah. And we still got an hour and a half, so maybe some of you will come through. And because apparently, I didn't know this, we have a bunch of people who went pro as comedians. James weighs in this morning. He says, let the kids guess your height. Winner from each class gets a pair of earbuds so they can listen to you each morning.
That's pretty good. Like a carnival. No.
Have a little bell up there and go ding when they get it right. Yeah, that's
or a gong. Make them leave the room.
We had that going for me. So, yeah. All right. Good times.
Dexter hits us up this morning in the Shepherd's Glass inbox. Says, wanted to be a pitcher for the Red Sox. Now I'm a firefighter in Charleston.
Cool.
Well done, sir. Again, a lot of these jobs that you end up, you don't see it as your dream. You end up going pro in your actual deal, become, I think, much more important in the big picture than what you dreamed of doing. And the weird part to me is that when you talk to people who you assume fulfill these dreams, right, professional athletes, it's like they almost, they still have dreams to be other things too. Like, I think the old line is every professional athlete actually wants to be a rock star, and every rock star wants to be a professional athlete. That's the thing. Very rarely do you ever hear, like, yeah, I actually did what I wanted to do. I don't think I've ever heard anybody say that. Have you ever heard that?
I don't know. I think most athletes, I think what gets lost in translation, I think it was the broke that they did it on that kind of highlighted, because we all think, okay, you're a professional athlete, you'll just do that for the rest of your life. Kind of like some of the people who are tweeting in and saying, okay, I do the, Michael tweeting about the worm distribution business. You know, you're going to do that, I would assume, for 40 or 50 years. Athletes, by and large, the max is going to be 18 to 20 years. That's if you can make it to 40. I mean, look at Tom Brady. But if you're a football player, you're doing it for 10 years, and then you're 30, 31, 32.
Whoa, the average is like 2.5.
Yeah, I guess I shouldn't even say that. I guess I'm thinking of I say good ones, but you get my point. Like, you think about
great ones.
Getting a career for 5 to 7 years, you're right.
The but clock then, is always ticking.
But then that career's done. The majority of professional athletes' career, I don't know what the percentage would be, but whether it's baseball, whether it's football, whether it's basketball, is you're done by 30. You're out of that profession by 30 years of age. You still have to kind of come up with something to do for 30 years. I saw where Peyton Manning, I guess, is going to have a decision this week on whether or not he will be a commentator for Fox and call their Thursday night games.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it is kind of one of the things where you mention a profession and what you end up doing. The one that always got to me was Kevin Dyson, the former wide receiver for, I believe it was the Titans, who came up a yard short in the Super Bowl. And I think he was on the broke. I think that's where I remember him from. But he's now an assistant principal at a school in St. Louis, I believe is where it was at. And it's kind of fascinating to see because you see a guy that played such a big role, and he's walking around the hallways of a school, and I wonder if the students, like, recognize and know what he did. Like, that's kind of fascinating. If students come up to him, because, again, that was, what, I think 98 was when that play took place, 90,
99.
Somewhere in there. And it's just kind of fascinating that he moves on to the next part of his life, which is just as important. He's doing just as much to help. But the students walking around go, oh, yeah, I remember. Wow, Kevin Dyson's our – and I think that's always kind of fascinating because of these professional athletes. They get done. And I think the other perception is we see them in public. Okay, well, they just go right into the broadcasting booth. Oh, yeah.
There's only so many jobs there.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. It's just, oh, okay, they played, and now they're broadcasting, and that's how it is. And you don't think of all the ones who went on to go move on, because a lot of them don't save money or don't. And it, so, but still, you're done at 30. You can't retire. You can't sit around and play golf every day and just hang out once you're 30 years old. So it's fascinating when you talk about going pro in a sport. I wanted to do that. I wanted to go pitch for the Red Sox. I wanted to play with Ken Griffey Jr. I wanted to, be quarterback for the Falcons or whoever it was or whatever it may be. But then your career's over by 30 years of age, 30, 32, 34, if you're awesome or great, and now you got to find something else to do.
And that adjustment period is really difficult for a lot of people. Steve Francis just put out something on the Players Tribune relatively recently,
yeah,
talking about just – the struggles that he had. He went from 18 years old, where he said he's basically on the street corner dealing drugs, to 4 years later on top of the world in the NBA, and that didn't last very long either. And now I guess he recently just got arrested for public intoxication, and he just revealed the struggles there. And it's, I think, something that we all can relate to some degree, just not quite the peaks and the valleys. Like, we all have our own peaks and valleys, but usually not to near the depths or the heights of professional athletes. And that adjustment period, some people prepare for it and are really good at it. For instance, the first time you talked to Marcus Lattimore, I think you got a handle as a recruiting guy when he was, 16 years old,
yep,
that this kid is going to be able to be successful no matter what he does. And there are those people out there, but they're the exceptions. And we see it all the time with professional athletes who have been unprepared and unfortunately coddled and told they're really good, and they just think they're going to play forever and have no idea that, hey, one day it's going to end, man, and you're going to have to figure out something else to do.
Well, but again, that one day comes really quick. I think it comes a lot quicker. Again, I know for me there are times I run into professional athletes that I've known or I covered or have seen, and it's hard to see them back, like, into the real world doing stuff, because the ones we see, like, I give the perfect one is what the intern was talking about last night, LeBron James. We see the studs. We see the athletes, and you go, okay, after life, you've made millions upon millions upon millions of dollars, and you're always going to have speaking engagements, or you're going to be able to fill in here and do this, or you're going to be able to go own a sports team like Michael Jordan or Derek Jeter owning the Marlins now. That is the small percentage. There's so many of them who have good careers and maybe even great careers, and then they're done by 35. And again, a lot of people are not hardwired that way to be able to sit around and necessarily retire if you've saved the money. You want to go out and do something with your life, whether it's start a business or you need to get into the working field. And it's kind of crazy when you think about these guys saying, well, I wanted to go pro in this, but by the time your pro career is done in professional sports, all of a sudden you're barely through a part of your life. You've really now, you're 35, you're maybe at the most, you've got to go into the actual workforce.
We've got a guy from our hometown that he played for the Steelers back in the late 70s and in the 80s and won 2 Super Bowl rings, offensive lineman. But he's come back to the area and, was an athletic director at a community college and now is just very community oriented and driven. But I think had that from the beginning, knew that I need to have a plan for when school is over. So I think it's definitely important that they're guided that way, mm-hmm. But I know a lot of them aren't. They just see dollars and think, this is going to last forever. And
well, and the other thing is they get used to living that professional lifestyle,
mm-hmm,
that the money's a little bit easier to come by. You can kind of go and spend and do and that kind of partying, hardcore kind of lifestyle. And all of a sudden you're out of that, and that paycheck, you might be getting a good paycheck, but it's not the same as maybe that professional paycheck, mm-hmm, you're getting. It is fascinating when you see, that's why I go back, that 30 for 30 broke. As good as 30 for 30 does, I thought there was so much more they could have gone in depth with on that particular broke and showcased what happens to athletes when they're done with their career.
Yeah, but that would take cooperation, and that's the problem. And just the fact that you got some to cooperate and be open and honest about their most embarrassing moments, like getting scammed out of money or just being an idiot and spending a bunch of money and not knowing and then having the humility then to tell your story, just the fact that they got anybody to do it, I thought was really impressive. Adam weighing in, kind of, you mentioned you had someone in your hometown, Jen, who ended up playing for the Steelers. Adam said he wanted to play for the Steelers. Now I'm just a professional dreamer, he says, according to my wife. Andrew hits us up, says, I always wanted to be an astronaut. Today I sit in front of a computer, spaced out. I was close. Ted weighing in with the biggest attempt at humor this morning that most of our audience, I think, will enjoy, and anyone wearing orange this morning will not. Ted says, I wanted to be a new spring preacher. Now I'm a bag man for Clemson.
That's where we are this morning.
Randy, what did you want to go pro in, and then what did you actually go pro in?
Well, originally, like a lot of people, pro football, I was thinking about trying to get college scholarship, but I just missing a few things, speed, agility, size. You know, other than that, I probably could have made a pretty good pro.
You were robbed, man.
My second thing was the military, which I did, and I ended up staying 21 years and retiring. So came out pretty good. But I thought it was pretty interesting, the parallels to that, is because just like the military, most guys go in 20, 21 years old. They do 20 years, and then they start looking at retirement. They're only like 40, 41 years old, and then you have to think about a whole another career to do, because you can't just sit around the house at 40, 41 years old and do nothing. So I was thinking that parallels are pretty close.
No doubt about it, Randy. And the adjustment period, can you talk to us about that? How difficult that can be? I know I've read about that, especially guys who've been deployed and then come back and try to assimilate back to what we call normal life.
Yeah, and it's a very big one, especially for those of us that deployed a few times and come back. It's very difficult. But even I can remember back before the deployment, people were retiring. And just the life, I mean, military life and civilian life is so much different. I was a drill sergeant here at Fort Jackson and a first sergeant in a basic training company before I retired. And just having to deal with people there and then the way you have to deal with people outside. My first job outside, I was a manager. I went into the management program at Walmart, and I only made it like a year because, you know, you just can't deal with those kids the way you dealt with military kids. So it's a very big adjustment. So I ended up going back into government service. I work for the VA now, so things kind of make a little bit more sense there, being back with the government. But it's a very big transition.
It makes sense. Randy, appreciate the phone call. I am just picturing the most ridiculous examples of Randy as a drill sergeant-like Walmart manager. And just, you don't quite get the same responses from the Walmart employees as you would from the...
It's probably what you need,
right?
Is Randy's perspective.
Exactly. Thank you for your service, sir. Thanks for the insight as well. Bill, as he was talking there, it reminded me, it's very small in comparison, but even just growing up and being involved in sports, it was a big adjustment for me when I was just a student in college after that, because... When you're on a team, you got a schedule, you got practice basically every day or a game every day. Everything's kind of mapped out for you. The discipline is kind of built in, and I think that's a lot very similar to military life. Like, you're supposed to be certain places, certain times. It's regimented. You get used to that routine, and then when it's not there, I think that's when a lot of people find themselves kind of lost to a certain degree. Did you have that at all? Like when you got out of high school basketball yourself?
No, but I mean, it did carry over. I mean, with Bailey Harris, it was always, if you're not 15 minutes early, you're late. That, you know, practice starts at this time, and that you know, that's when practice starts. You don't show up and then start stretching and tie your shoes if practice started at 6 or right after school at 3:30. You didn't show up at 3:30 and tie your shoes and start stretching, and then you were into practice 15 minutes later. And so I think that did kind of pay off in some way. Obviously, right after high school, since I wasn't going anywhere to play college, I went back and started being an assistant coach and helping with the seventh and eighth grade team at that time. And so a lot of the things I learned kind of paid off. And then you kind of, because you're teaching it, because I was teaching it or coaching it, that motto, it kind of stuck with me, and it became a way of doing things, and it kind of has carried over for the better part of life into what I do now, just in terms of some of those mindsets. But I do understand that, kind of like you said, with athletes, I think, again, we all assume they play their games on Friday, on Saturday or Sunday, and then the rest of the week they're just kind of hanging out, maybe they got a little practice. But, you know, you talk to guys who've been in, it's a 7-to-6 job. You go in, you got meetings, you got lunch, you got training, you got a practice, you got more meetings, you got maybe a dinner, a little bit more in the training facility, and you go home. And the the regimen that you're on each and every day doesn't always carry over to the post life after school or after your professional career is over.
John Kootling is one of those guys, former Gamecock baseball player. He hits us up on the Shepherd's Glass inbox, says, wanted to play outfield for the Mets, ended up pitching for the Reds. Happiest now being a coach for North Greenville.
Cool.
And recruiting at the same time while weighing in on a radio show. Well played, sir.